Welcome to Redmond Radio and MCP Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, editor of MCPMag.com. Today is August 28th, and here's what you hear on this week's episode. IBM buys security vendor ISS, Microsoft mulls Vista discount offers during the holidays, and an RC version of IE7 gets released. That and an interview with Joel Smith, CTO at AppRiver, when we return to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio from this quick break. Welcome back, and thanks for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. I've got a handful of entries this week for the t-shirt giveaway, and I'll announce the winner in the IT Web Gem segment. In the meantime, those of you who'd like to enter the drawing for a Redmond t-shirt, do so by sending me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's michaeld@mcpmag.com, with Redmond t-shirt on the subject line. It's that simple, and your chances are good when no one's paying attention and almost everyone forgets to send an entry. And need I remind you all once again, iTunes or iPod listeners can now download this show as it gets posted every week. Just point your applet to mcpmag.com/rss/podcasts. Remember to pass the good news on to your colleagues if you'd also find this show worthwhile. The number of listeners who get the show by iTunes is growing, but as always, I can use more. And finally, a programming note reminder. Next week's show won't be available until Tuesday due to the Labor Day holiday here in the States. Okay, with the usual housekeeping out of the way, let's go to the headlines. Nothing on the certification front, so we'll immediately jump into news on the wire. Salesforce.com has acquired a four-person startup specializing in paid search technology that will be tailored to work with the online business applications of Salesforce. At a press event in Boston last Monday, Marc Benioff, chairman and CEO of Salesforce.com, announced the purchase of Kaiden Corporation, whose technology is the basis for the new Salesforce for Google AdWords. The product is an on-demand service allowing companies to create, manage, and track the effectiveness of their search engine campaigns from all within Salesforce apps. The new service allows marketing managers to analyze campaigns by viewing which people use Google AdWords, thereby becoming sales leads. The service can gather together a range of different information, including the amount of sales from AdWords, and then offer that information to managers through a dashboard interface. IBM last Wednesday said it will spend $1.3 billion in cash to acquire Internet Security Systems, which performs network monitoring and analysis services from companies. The deal values ISS at $28 a share, an 8% premium to ISS's close of $26 last Tuesday on the NASDAQ. If the acquisition is approved by shareholders, the company expects to close it in the fourth quarter. IBM has now agreed to buy three public companies this month alone. 2 weeks ago, it reached a pact to buy document management software provider FileNet for $1.6 billion and will spend $740 million for MRO software, which helps industrial companies track physical assets. Crosstech is shipping an updated version of its ActiveWorks security event management software. Version 3.5 of ActiveWorks Security Center adds new features for complying with federal regulations, as well as for analyzing and sharing real-time security data. It ties in logs and data from all of the organization's security devices to provide critical alerts, out-of-the-box reports for compliance, and built-in forensics tools designed to help quickly drill down into events of interest. The upgrade includes a new embedded reporting center that lets users control parameters and schedule automated reporting tasks. It's also bundled with more than 200 new payment industry card data security standard, Sarbox, Gramm-Leach-Bliley, and HIPAA reports. Users can also revert to Crystal reports, which still remains an option. There's good news for hardware vendors, and that's growth in revenues for so-called volume servers. Servers which cost $25,000 or less continued to grow in the second quarter. Bad news? The growth rate is moderating according to Market Research IDC's latest quarterly tracking report. Volume server revenue in the second quarter grew 6.2% year over year and continues to be the only growth segment for the server market overall. It was the third consecutive quarter of single-digit growth for the volume server market. Helping to drive that continued growth are corporate IT initiatives to consolidate servers, partly via virtualization. That trend cuts both ways, however, as the advent of multi-core CPUs drives growth in single-socket and 32-plus socket systems, rather ironically reducing the overall unit shipment growth, according to the report. Still, the report is good news for both Windows and Linux server vendors. The report states, Windows servers showed positive growth as revenues grew 3.1% and unit shipments grew 11% year over year. Quarterly revenue of $4.2 billion for Windows servers represented 34.2% of overall quarterly factory revenue. As customers deploy more fully configured Windows servers as part of server consolidation and virtualization initiatives, Linux server revenues also continue to grow. According to the report, after 15 consecutive quarters of double-digit year-over-year revenue growth, spending on Linux servers moderated significantly, growing 6.1% to $1.5 billion when compared with 2Q05. Linux servers now represent 12% of all server revenue, up slightly from the same quarter last year. Meanwhile, Unix servers continued their slow slippage with a 1.6% decline in revenues year-over-year and a decline in unit shipments of 1.8% compared to the second quarter of 2005. Nonetheless, worldwide Unix revenues were $4.3 billion for the quarter, representing 35% of all quarterly server spending and reflecting continued IT investment. Again, a lot of that revenue came from the volume segment of the market. Overall, IBM maintained the top spot in terms of server revenues with 31% market share. HP holds number 2 with a 28.7%, while Sun pulls up third with 12.9%, a slight bump from 11.2% during the second quarter last year. Dell brings up fourth with 10.3%, followed by Fujitsu, Fujitsu Siemens in fifth place with 4.5%. And that's how last week shaped up. You can find more news on mcpmag.com and searchcities.com daily. After the break, an interview with Joel Smith at AppRiver, here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Welcome back, and thanks once again for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. This week, an interview with Joel Smith, CTO of AppRiver. The interview was conducted a few months ago, back in May, when the company introduced some new improvements to its AppRiver with Shoreline-hosted Exchange service. Joel was gracious enough to take a call from me and explain how it all works.
So I'm Joel Smith, CTO of AppRiver, here to talk to us about hosted messaging. And Joel, you have a product called Exchange Hosting with Shoreline.
That's correct, Michael. Thank you for the call. We do provide Exchange Shoreline for it's a hosted exchange provisioning tool, and it makes the provisioning and management and sort of the rollout of Exchange just like ridiculously easy to use.
So tell us about the history of AppRiver. How long have you been around, and what was the mission for the company?
Sure. AppRiver is about a little over 4 years old. We started out as a spam and virus filtering company. We have a large network of resellers, and through that network of resellers, we service about 25,000 businesses globally. We're growing at a pretty rapid rate on the spam and virus filtering side. The majority of our customer base uses Microsoft Exchange for their messaging and collaboration platform. What was happening with us is that our support group wound up doing a lot of support and a lot of assistance to our customers with their Exchange platforms. We had a very intense expressed interest in those customers wanting us to do their Exchange hosting for them. And fast forward a year, and Shoreline was born.
Shoreline looks like it was an outgrowth of some technology as we're
it is.
Using.
Well, the Exchange messaging server is actually a really good tool for businesses. A lot of medium and large-sized businesses use it, and they benefit from all the features that it provides. It's kind of because of all the features it provides, it's a daunting task for smaller and medium-sized businesses to roll it out. You know, they have to deal with the Active Directory infrastructures, they have to deal with the Exchange platform itself, all the servers that go with it. And if you're a small company, like 50 users, it's not, an easy task to do. What Shoreline does is it's a kind of a web interface or a wrapper around Exchange, and it just takes over all the components of Exchange and everything and just makes it so easy. You know, you can set up Exchange in 5 minutes.
Okay. So basically, that really is sort of an interface to help you provision how Exchange is used, the quotas and everything else, for especially for small businesses.
Absolutely, and it's just silly how easy it is.
Was Shoreline also used in with a lot of the enterprise customers you have?
It is. We're starting to roll it out with some well-known hosting companies, both in the U.S. and in Europe. And their independent test, you know, we go back and forth with them. The larger companies, it's kind of hard to work with them. But they keep going back and forth. Do we build it ourselves? Do we use this? And when we can actually get them to sit down and just try it, and it's hard to explain. You know, it's not really tangible to explain to somebody until they actually sit down, log in, and try it. And then they get the, oh, wow factor. Like, wow, this is easy. I like this.
I always wonder if some, especially smaller companies, seem to have some benefit from it, because you know, frankly, they're probably not financially capable of having to hire an exchange expert. So I can see how they'd be able to see the benefits really quickly. For
Absolutely.
Enterprises, however, I mean, sometimes they're fully capable of hiring exchange experts. Where would Shoreline come in as a benefit?
Shoreline actually enables those smaller companies to use Exchange. Again, Exchange is a really nice platform. I mean, it's great for, it's designed around the end user. So it just makes their business processes and their work life just kind of flow. And it's been difficult for the smaller companies to do that, just because of what you said. They can't really have the administrator on site and the sort of, you know, you have 15 employees and you got to do Exchange right, you really need a couple of servers. And when they just do outsourced Exchange, they don't have to worry about that. They can be up and running in a couple minutes, but yet they get all the benefits.
Yeah, but what about for the enterprise?
It does take a lot of the complexity out of Exchange. It sort of modularizes it. It takes, you know, the things like that, you know, if you're not watching out for them, it makes them scale easier. You know, you can have one server start to fill up, and Shoreline can say, hey, we're getting, you know, a certain capacity on the server. You need to provision another one, and we'll start putting new accounts on that new server. And it allows you to kind of split all the functions of Exchange up and monitors and manages them. It allows you to scale really well.
As far as hosted messaging, can you tell me some of the more common myths in doing that rather than going the traditional route of, you know, having your own Exchange servers?
Absolutely. The previous version of Exchange did make it kind of difficult for an outsourced provider to provide, you know, Exchange hosting for somebody. There were some extra things you had to do to get it working. With the advent of Exchange 2003, all those myths, or, you know, some of them weren't really myths, you know, you don't have that problem anymore. The Exchange 2003 has the RPC over HTTP, mm-hmm. which basically means you can use the Exchange system over the normal internet traffic. And all the benefits, all the collaboration, all the tools are there. It doesn't really matter if the server's in your office or if we're taking care of it for you.
I mean, one of the things I wonder about is you might lose collaboration capabilities.
Not so with Exchange 2003 and our hosting platform. If anything, some of the collaboration utilities are improved upon, especially if you're a multi-location business. Having one central place for all those tools make the collaboration actually better.
It's more than what you'd get with Outlook for Web Access, for example. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. We make the Outlook for Web Access very fast, very easy to use. Shoreline doesn't really interfere with the Outlook for Web Access. We do add some features to it, you know, for managing your spam and virus filtering. But as far as using Outlook Web Access or using your normal Outlook 2003 client, they're both very rich and very fast, and you don't really, if anything, you should see an improvement in your messaging, not a slowdown.
So what's in store for AppRiver in the next few months?
We're really pleased at how well our kind of trial tests are going. Our signups are coming in at a much higher rate than we expected, which is great. We love it. We have been working with several well-known hosting providers. We're getting to roll out the, getting ready to roll out the Shoreline offering via those hosting providers in both the U.S. and in Europe. And definitely look for our service offering with those guys.
Okay, and what about, what are your plans with Exchange 12 or 2007?
We're geared up for that. Some of the functions with Exchange 12, how it uses web services for administration, those play really well with our Shoreline product, and that's kind of how Shoreline is built. So we're really ready to go with it. We're definitely hoping to add more functionality with the Shoreline offering.
Finally, let's talk about pricing. It's pretty important. And what can they learn about more about AppRiver?
The pricing for Exchange hosting is competitively priced at $12.95 per user. You can get the GoodLink push technology services and the BlackBerry services. It's one click, and it provisions it. You're ready to go. No hassle there. And that's a little bit upcharge. You can visit our website, appriver.com, appriver.com, for more information, or talk to your local reseller.
All right. Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
We'll be back with IT Web Gems after this break. here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Welcome back, and thanks for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Just my weekly reminder that I'm giving away one Redmond t-shirt every week to one lucky person who wins the drawing. To try for one, all you have to do is enter the next giveaway by sending me an email at michaeld@mcpmag.com. That's Michael D, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-D, at mcpmag.com. Tell me whether you're a new or regular listener. Any additional comments or feedback is appreciated, but not necessary to make you a winner. And speaking of winners, this week it's Slavomir Majanski. His t-shirt will be in the mail once we figure out where in the world he is. And from his email, I'm guessing somewhere in the former Czech Republic. Congrats, Slavo, and good luck to everyone else next week. Now here's what caught my eye as IT Web Gems. Last week, Sun paid $6,000 for a life-size painted cutout of HP co-founders Bill Hewlett and David Packard, one of five portraits of tech titans traveling thousands of miles in a zany cross-country art project called Pioneers Hitchhiking in the Valley of Heart's Delight. The painting depicts the Silicon Valley icon sitting atop the garage where they founded their company almost seven decades ago. Sun chief executive Jonathan Swartz and rank-and-file engineers draped the wooden rendering in Sun t-shirts and posed with it for photographs. The five cutouts created by four San Francisco area artists as part of an electronics art expo in San Jose were set loose with instructions inscribed on their backs about where in the Silicon Valley they're supposed to end up. Passersby found the paintings at highway ramps, rest stops, rural routes, and elsewhere with the request to drive them westward. Each piece was tracked by GPS units and charted on a website. The artists requested digital photographs and asked drivers to carve their email addresses onto the cutouts. All participants share in the eventual sale price. The artists asked HP to purchase the piece for corporate headquarters, but the company refused, so Sun came away with it. Sun says it'll donate the piece to the Tech Museum of Innovation in San Jose. Now, Bob Jones has a lofty idea for improving communications around the world. Strategically floating robotic airships above the Earth as an alternative to unsightly telecom towers on the ground and expensive satellites in space. Jones, who's a former NASA manager, envisions a fleet of unmanned stratolites hovering in the atmosphere and blanketing large swaths of territory with wireless access for high-speed data and voice communications. The idea of using airships as communication platforms isn't new. It was widely floated during the dot-com boom. It didn't really fly then, and Jones is the first to admit the latest venture is a gamble. Tethered flights of a prototype, which cost about $3 million to build and is about one-fifth scale model of the planned commercial airships, are scheduled later this month in the Mojave Desert. Jones says it will be a critical test of the technology. If everything goes as planned, remote-controlled flights would later launch this year from nearby Edwards Air Force Base. During the test, the airship is expected to float to 45,000 feet for several hours. He envisions the commercial airships will rise to about 13 miles and stay aloft for 18 months at a time. The idea is not altogether wacky and out of thin air, so to speak. Interest in airships is on the rise with the U.S. military exploring them for airborne reconnaissance and homeland security, and corporations looking skyward for civilian communication use. Authorities in the southern city of Petesi in Romania have broken up four sophisticated internet crime rings, police said several weeks ago. A total of 62 suspects, 23 of whom were arrested, are accused of defrauding 120 foreigners of more than $128,000 after an extensive investigation which was assisted by the FBI and the U.S. Secret Service. From 2004 through 2006, the suspects allegedly imitated the sites of well-known internet-based companies and obtained the email addresses of their customers. They later contacted the customers and asked them to update their personal information, using the details to create identities and offer non-existent items for sale. They would then contact bidders and tell them to pay using online money transfer services. Some of the suspects also created fake foreign identity documents and traveled abroad to collect money, according to police. The suspects face up to 15 years in prison if found guilty of fraud. An AT&T official has sent a company memo warning of a scam being perpetrated on California consumers, pizza restaurants, and AT&T. The scam starts with someone contacting an AT&T service rep saying he works for a pizza restaurant that their phone is having trouble, and then requesting that their calls be forwarded to another line, which the scammer has control over. Orders are routed there, and when someone calls for pizza, the scammer pretends to be the pizza place and asks for a pizza being paid by a credit card only. Immediately after the order, the scammer uses the credit card number to order things on the internet for a short period so that they're not found out. The scam was perpetrated in two instances in Southern California so far, said police, but there may be more instances of that happening now that the news is widespread, unless phone companies can help thwart the practice. And here's a fraud of a different kind. Remember last week's story about some hackers at a conference who were able to hack a MacBook through its wireless controller? Simply put, the hack was faked when Apple wanted to investigate the hack further to help them make their products more secure, reports the unofficial Apple weblog. And that's it on that. Two cool items I spied on weblogs this month. First is a flexible e-paper SVGA display seen on the Techie blog site. The demo shows what looks like a piece of flexible paper that displays a page from a newspaper. It says that it's the future of newspapers and magazines, but I find that highly doubtful. And over at the Blog is Everything website is a photo of a transparent TV from Sony. It looks like a TV right out of the movie Sleeper by Woody Allen, which might be good to sit in front of while using an orgasmatron. Now, let's look at something a little more real. Nerds are strange, and you know that, and further proof of this is the Russian math genius and recluse who refused a prize for his work. Grigory Perelman, a 40-year-old native of St. Petersburg, was praised for work in the field known as topology, which studies shapes, and for a breakthrough which proved a theorem about the nature of multidimensional space that has stumped people for 100 years, apparently. But he refused the Fields Medal that was presented in Madrid this year, as well as the accompanying $1 million prize. Some websites cite his reason as not wanting his work to be taken less seriously with a prize behind it. Now, if we could only figure out what problem he solved in layman's terms, I think that'd be prize-worthy. Dell has been in the news lately for the battery problem and an SEC probe of its finances. Here's another small blow to the company. The Pan-Asian Biz reports that Lenovo has hired a former president of Dell China, David Miller, to head Lenovo's Asia-Pacific operations working from Singapore. Lenovo has also nabbed Sotaro Amanos, a former corporate director of Dell's home and business sales division in Japan, to head up Lenovo Japan. Dell founder and chairman Michael Dell responded with a pledge to expand its sales force in China, build more close alliances with software companies in a plan to groom local talent. You'd think sex would rank high on searches, but that term actually ranks lower than words like lyrics, school, city, pictures, and music. That according to AOL, which released information on anonymous search data from 65,000 customers. It's part of an analysis of data that the Wall Street Journal's Lee Gomez had done on the data, which he obtained from AOL. Of course, Lee notes that porn is third behind entertainment and shopping, and that 14% of users made some sort of explicit search. And that news is interesting in light of a new study by Salary.com and AOL that employees spend an average of 1.86 hours of an 8-hour day doing something other than their job, with more than half of those surveyed admitting to surfing the internet at work. Taking into account all the other time wasters, such as socializing and running errands during work time, the survey estimates that this wasted time is costing employers $544 billion. The survey does have some good news. The amount of time wasted is decreasing, says the study. And on that note, that's the week that was in IT Web Gems. If you have one, send it to michaeld@mcpmag.com. You'll get a Redmond t-shirt if I use it on the next podcast. We'll be back with Microsoft News from ENT Mag after this quick break, here on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Thanks for listening to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Here's what made headlines this week over at entmag.com. Microsoft is considering discounts or other promotions during the holidays to entice customers to upgrade their PCs with Windows Vista, even though Vista isn't due to hit store shelves until January at the earliest. Any end-of-the-year effort to spur PC purchases would likely please many retailers and computer manufacturers who fear disappointing sales during the crucial holiday as consumers wait for the highly anticipated and long-delayed software. Kevin Kutz, a director in Microsoft's Windows Client Group, confirmed last Tuesday that the company is in talks with PC makers and retailers about a range of possible holiday promotions, but he declined to offer other details. After a series of delays, Microsoft said that Vista appears to be on track to ship the business version of Vista in November and to consumers in January. But last month, Kevin Johnson, who's co-president of the Microsoft division that includes Windows, said the company wouldn't hesitate to delay Vista based on quality concerns. Some manufacturers are warming to the idea of coupons, but several analysts suggest that such a move won't help spur PC sales, which they predict to be down this holiday buying season. Analysts cite among consumer concerns that they'd have to purchase the new OS, even at a discount, which they'd expect for free when they're buying a new system, and have to install it themselves. On the legal front, Microsoft has filed three lawsuits against cyber squatters in an effort to fight back against a surge of online trademark infringement by people seeking profit from pay-per-click advertising. The company said cyber squatters and typo squatters are now registering more than 2,000 domains each day targeting Microsoft. The vast majority of the sites, which have addresses like MicrosoftRebate.com and Xbox36.com.com and MSNFinance.com, are bought by professional operations that place nothing on the pages but pay-per-click ads served by online ad networks, Microsoft said. About a quarter of the sites use privacy services to disguise their identities. Aaron Kornblum, the company's Internet Safety Enforcement attorney, said that Microsoft has witnessed a virtual land rush for Internet domain names with the goal of driving traffic for profit. In response, Microsoft filed two lawsuits last Monday against four defendants it said were profiting from domain names that infringe on Microsoft trademarks. One filed in U.S. District Court in Utah alleges that Jason Cox of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Daniel Goggins of Provo, Utah, and John Jonas of Springville, Utah, together registered 324 domain names targeting Microsoft. In the second suit, filed in U.S. District Court for the Central District of California, Microsoft alleges that Dan Brown of Long Beach, California, whose firm is Partner 4 Holdings, registered 85 domain names. The company also filed a John Doe lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Washington. The suit is aimed at identifying cyber squatters and typo squatters who conceal their identities, and Microsoft said it will soon issue subpoenas to domain name registrars. Microsoft argues that the websites are forbidden under the Anti-Cyber Squatting Consumer Protection Act. That law was signed by President Clinton in 1999. And imposes fines of up to $100,000 in damages for anyone who, with bad faith intent to profit, registers, traffics, or uses a domain name that is identical to, confusingly similar, or dilutive of an existing trademark, that according to Microsoft. Over in Asia, Microsoft said it would release new versions of Windows in South Korea to comply with an antitrust ruling. Earlier this year, the Korea Fair Trade Commission fined Microsoft 32.5 billion won and ordered it to provide separate versions of Windows, saying the company abused its dominant market position by tying certain software to Windows. In compliance with the ruling, Microsoft released two new versions of Windows last week, one stripped of Windows Media Player and Windows Messenger, and one that has links to web pages that allow consumers to download competing versions of that software. The move comes after a Seoul court last month rejected Microsoft's request for a stay of the penalties, while the company pursues a legal challenge through the antitrust ruling. Microsoft is pursuing an appeal to the Fair Trade Commission's ruling in the Seoul High Court. But the work continues in other areas of the company as Microsoft began shipping the first release candidate of Internet Explorer 7 for Windows XP. Margaret Cobb, the group product manager on the Internet Explorer team, said that the company's intent is to have it ship in the fourth quarter. Cobb said the plan for now is to only have a single release candidate before RTM, but we'll have a few more if more bugs arise out of the latest RC. Because of the security improvements included in IE7, when the final code is available, Microsoft plans to make it a high-priority update on its automatic update and Windows update sites. IE will include new features such as tabbed browsing and integrated RSS reader. A version of IE7 for Windows Vista will ship when Vista is released. Microsoft and Citrix Systems said that they're collaborating on a so-called appliance aimed at serving branch offices. The appliance will be based on Windows Server 2003 and ISA Server, as well as Citrix WAN optimization technologies that will be easily administered from a remote location. Citrix cites research that shows 55% of enterprise employees access all of their mission-critical business applications from a remote location. Citrix's contribution to the collaboration will include WAN Scalar technology it acquired earlier last week with the completion of its purchase of privately held Orbital Data. And finally, as if IT folks around the world have enough peripheral devices to contend with invading their networks, Microsoft is getting closer to shipping its iPod killer with confirmation that the device will be built by Toshiba. Toshiba's role was disclosed last week when it filed papers with the FTC. Photos included in the filing show a white rectangular device with a large screen and several buttons. The minimalist feel closely resembles Apple's iPod. Microsoft has said that Zune is key to the company's overall entertainment ambitions and will capitalize on other entertainment offerings, such as the Xbox and Windows Media Center PC lines from several manufacturers. And that's what made news this week on MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. Be sure to visit entmag.com and redmondmag.com daily for Microsoft news as it happens. As well, continue to send me email if you'd like to be entered into the Redmond t-shirt drawing. You can send those emails to michaeld@mcpmag.com, which is also the address to send me feedback on the show and its contents. And finally, a reminder on the programming note, next week's show won't be available until Tuesday due to the Labor Day holiday here in the States. I'm Michael Domingo. I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to listen to MCP Radio and Redmond Radio. See you here next Tuesday.